Hello, and welcome back to another episode of XY. On this week's episode, we will be catching up with the amazing, awesome, super talented, and very successful Joe Wellstead, who, in addition to being the CEO of Motion Nutrition, who are doing some really cool stuff in the supplement space. I don't even know if he would call himself a supplement brand, to be honest. But in addition to being the CEO of Motion Nutrition, he's also a partner in NoJack Media and a Commonwealth Games finalist in swimming. And as it comes out in the wash of this interview, it transpires that he's also the founder of the Anti-Hustle Hustle Club, which is a really cool movement, which I won't say too much about just now because we talk about it a lot in the interview. But it's a really cool initiative, looking at the way we have a relationship with work. We chat about a lot of different stuff. We're both expecting fathers at similar times in our partners' pregnancies. So we get into that a little bit. And yeah, I have to say I came off of the Zoom with Joe really liking him as a person. So I hope you enjoy listening to our chat as much as I enjoyed having it in the first place. Enjoy. Okay, cool. We are recording. Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. I can see you've got some sound dampening gear behind you. That's handy.
Well, I haven't completed my setup yet, but I'm alone here, so hopefully it'll be pretty quiet.
Cool. Are you, to be honest, I've had to do all of these interviews via Zoom since Miss Rona came to town, so I've kind of chucked the necessity for amazing audio quality and exchange that for a casual, lighthearted conversation. But that's where we are.
How's everything going for you?
Yeah, good. Apologies about cancelling our previous time slot. Just was a bit of a stressful day. And to be honest, the interview was the last thing that came to mind. I completely forgot that.
I get it entirely.
Yeah, it's a crazy ride. To be honest, I didn't know that you were expecting as well. So that'll be cool to chat about on the show, actually, just because... For me, things have kind of just changed a lot mentally since that you find out you're going to be a dad. And I don't know what your guy's decision was, but we actually found out we're going to be having a daughter at the 20-week scan, which was just so mind-blowing because I didn't really think that the gender of the baby would do anything, you know, but actually it kind of made it much more tangible than...
We did the same. We wanted to find out, and we found out we've got a boy coming.
Oh, congrats, man.
Same. Thanks. It was the same. Like, it's not so much, you know, the fact of boy or girl. It's just like, whoa, that's real now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that is it. Like, it just kind of just cemented it. It's like, okay, this is like a tangible thing. So yeah. Where's the accent from, man? I feel like I can hear some Scottish in there. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born in Inverness, actually, but my father's from Edinburgh.
Oh, cool.
But my mum's from the US and I grew up in France. And then I moved to Stirling to study and swim there when I was 19. And that's where, so my wife was at Glasgow Uni. And so we might have crossed paths over those years because I spent a lot of time.
I think
with a similar bunch to you. So
no
it's
way.
Possible. It's possible that we've met before.
Yeah. It's a small world, isn't it? It's really funny. Anyway, like I'll we're getting into it, which is always a good thing, but let's go back to the start. So do you want to introduce yourself, just say kind of like who you are and what it is you do?
Sure. My name is Joe Wellstead. I'm an entrepreneur. I run a supplement company called Motion Nutrition, where we help people deal with stress, sleep, and energy. And I am also getting involved with a few other things, very specifically to this topic, actually, or related to this topic. Recently started working on another project called the Anti-Hustle Hustle Club, which is all about the ability to create great things and talking to people and creating a community of people that are creating great things without sacrificing their entire life. I think that's so important because there's been this vibe in entrepreneurship where it's like it has to be 24/7, 365 a year. And I think that that's causing a lot of damage to young entrepreneurs and also pushing a lot of people away from it who would be, you know, who have ideas, but who are thinking, man, I can't do this because like, it's too scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you know what, like you've kind of, the Anti-Hustle Hustle Club is something I didn't know that you were associated with, but I've come across it on Instagram and I was like, fucking yes, this is so like dead on with how I feel, because in various incarnations of side projects and side hustles and stuff that I've had on the go, my wife's always been like, you know, you can just enjoy doing this. The podcast being one of them, you know, I was kind of like, well, if it's not going to be a billion, like kind of series F, like I'm going to sell it out to Amazon. Like, what's the point? Like, and you kind of get sucked in by that startup world of like venture capital and private equity, and it's Silicon Valley. And if you're not getting like these big bucks and it's not 100% of your life, then you are kind of coming up short. You're not dedicated to it. You know, you're not trying hard enough. And it's been a huge realization over the last 18 months, 2 years for me, of actually realizing what it is in work that makes me happy, but also realizing that it's okay to not give 100% to your job. You can feel validated by the relationships in your life rather than the money that you make or the fucking huge empire that you build. But with the Anti-Hustle Club, the Anti-Hustle Hustle Club specifically, how did that start? Because clearly there's a few people in the world, myself included, who align with its thinking. But what was the catalyst for you starting that?
It's an idea I had in the back of my mind for a while. And around the sort of end of last year, end of 2020, I just sat down with a friend of mine who's a graphic designer, and I wanted to just create something, like just get something together that was like tangible, and then just kind of see where that led me and who would latch onto the idea. And then that's kind of how I found out. I knew that there was a bit of a sort of quiet undercurrent for like, we've had enough of this hustle culture, but nobody was really talking about it yet. And over the last 6 months, like people have started really voicing this opinion. And I think that partly it's in response to, you know, in the pandemic, when it first started last March, those first few months, there was this massive outpour of like, oh, if you're not, you know, the last 2 months of lockdown, if you haven't learned like a third language or written a book or started a fifth business, like, what have you been doing, man? There's no excuse. Now's the time. And it's like, fuck off. Yeah. I'm going to enjoy my life, you know, regardless of lockdown or not. Like, there's more to it than just producing work and just doing output. And that's kind of like the thing that got me started with it. And then, yeah, it just happens that a lot of people are feeling quite strongly about it. And I think for me, the main thing is Anti-Hustle Hustle Club. So it's not just like slacking off and not doing anything. Yeah. It's, you know, I would definitely say that people say that I hustle, like, because I work very hard and I do a lot of things. But so that's the hustle club part. But the anti-hustle part is, there's more to me than just that. You know, there's my home life, there's my personal life, my family life. There's the sports activities that I enjoy doing. There's lots to me than just work. So
yeah,
it's not all encompassing. And also something I realized is, you know, a lot of founders, and it tends to be like the founder bros will say things like, you know, it has to be 24/7, 365, or else you're not doing as much as you can. And I'm like, that's a privilege. That's not a prerequisite of success. That's a privilege. You are able to give it your all. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Good for you. That means that you started with a head start compared to everybody else. But if you think that's the only way to success, then I'd suggest you go speak to more diverse founders who perhaps have kids to look after or parents to look after, or they have to maintain a stable job because they've got dependents and rent to pay and things like this. And they don't have a big pile of cash to give them financial security. Mm-hmm. So it's important to realize that it's a privilege, not a prerequisite of success. Yeah. And you know, I'll just, before I forget.
Go for it.
You were talking about like, you know, Series F and raising money and things like this. The other thing that I realized there is what investors are attracted to the most is FOMO. And if you're having a bit of fun, but also are successful and you're, you know, kind of quietly going about your thing, but clearly are successful, but without being, you know, too like involved in the hustle culture, just doing your own thing and being successful in the industry, then that's going to attract a lot of people.
Yeah,
that's a vibe that's like really, really attractive.
Yeah. And actually, it's funny you say that, because I was about to make the exact same point, that, or like a similar point at least, that one of my favorite books I've ever read is by Adam Grant, the organizational psychologist. He wrote this book called The Originals. I don't know if you've read it.
No, but sounds good.
100% pick it up. So it kind of, it dispels so many myths about startup culture and this kind of belief that the world's most successful entrepreneurs are risk takers and they're pioneers and they're kind of going into new territory blind, and they're almost psychopathic in their kind of tendencies to be like really aggressive with their decision making. He's like, that's just not the case. If you look at people like Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg, the privilege thing comes into play there. He always gets spoken about as a dropout. The bit that gets left off of that is from Harvard. So like if Facebook didn't work, he was still a Harvard graduate with probably quite promising career prospects. The guys that founded Warby Parker stayed in full-time employment for, I think, 2 years after the company had successfully been trading. And he kind of breaks down this idea that you've got to be this hustler. In actual fact, some of the most successful people in the industry have been very cautious and very tentative at making that jump into full-time hustler or however kind of history decides to remember them. It's super interesting, man. And I think that that's the Anti-Hustle Hustle Club. I didn't intend to speak to you about that. I didn't know that you were anything to do with that. I just kind of found it online and really related to it. But that's really cool that you're behind that. I guess the main thing I wanted to chat to you about was motion, because supplements are one of those things that, speaking personally, I guess at an industry level and at a societal level, they're relatively contentious. But then at a personal level, I've got like a super mixed relationship with them, where sometimes I've found them to be really, like they've pushed me forward in a good way. And then other times I felt like supplements are the kind of thing that like, oh, if I don't take it twice a day, then I'm like, you know, it becomes like another thing to beat myself up with. Mm-hmm, so it'd be cool to just understand from you, because your brand feels very holistic. You know, like when I go on your channels, it feels like a very inclusive brand. It doesn't feel bro-ish, or it's not kind of, you know, like Get Ripped or anything. For anyone that's not checked out the brand yet, they definitely should. But like, where did it come from, and like, why supplements, and what's your kind of ethos?
Right. So this is where I'm already kicking myself for getting too ahead of myself in the intro, because I didn't mention that I used to be a professional swimmer, and I had a, this is leading to 2014 Commonwealth Games when I retired. So this is now quite a few years ago. And back then supplements industry had, well, it's moved on a lot since then. And, you know, 10 years ago, it was still very much in that bro space, like bodybuilding and only kind of targeting elite athletes and this kind of thing. So it was very much like geared towards performance and aesthetics and things like this. And I thought that was very narrow-minded and for me personally frustrating, because yeah, sure, I wanted to improve my performance, but I didn't want to damage my health. I didn't want to take, you know, I was eating super healthy, really good food and making very conscious and active effort to eating really healthily. And then the supplements were full of shit. So that was a bit, very frustrating and counterintuitive to me. Yeah. The things that are actually there to help specifically my performance contain the ingredients that I'm trying to avoid in my whole diet. So that was just a bit crap. So I had that really strong frustration from being an athlete. And then a few years afterwards, my business partner, Charlie, and I were discussing this. And, you know, we realized that nobody was addressing this fact that what was frustrating for me was I wanted to improve how I was performing, but also I wanted to improve my health. So those two things hand in hand were why we started Motion. And then we kind of realized, well, it's one thing to focus on physical performance, but actually what unites everybody, whether you're an athlete or an artist or an entertainer or a regular person with a 9-to-5 job, and you want to be able to do your job well, but also have that energy for socializing, exercising, looking after your family and so on. Yeah. And then also be able to, you know, switch the light off and sleep at night. What's probably more important is that we look after how we're performing mentally. Because if you have a strong sort of emotional and mental stable core where you can handle all these things, all these stressors and externalities, then everything is going to work better. If you're smoothing off your peaks and troughs of cortisol, if you're able to handle these, you know, distractions and notifications and pressure, social pressures and work pressures that we're all going through, and also spending 12 hours a day in front of a screen or whatever, if you're able to handle these things better, then you're going to have more energy to do whatever else you want to do outside of work. And you're going to perform better in work. And you're going to have better relationships, because you're not going to have these crazy mood swings. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the essence now of Motion, is dealing with people's stress, sleep, and energy. And if we cater for these things, everything else just declines off of that way better. Yeah. And so that's why we've really narrowed the focus there.
I guess it's about the benefit presumably comes in repetition, right? It's not like an immediate benefit to your kind of system physically or mentally. It's kind of, you have to repeat taking it, right?
Yeah. So this is the thing when you try and create, you know, long-term healthy change, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, we have a sleep supplement called Unplug, which for some people, it'll kick off right from the first night, but for others, it might take 4 or 6 weeks to really get benefits. And then they add up for like 4 to 6 months. And that's when your new normal settles in and like mm-hmm. you expect to have really good sleep every night. Same thing for daytime energy. We have a supplement called Power Up, which will help with mental performance and focus and memory and these kind of things and mood. We don't have caffeine in there because, first of all, most people have enough caffeine in their diet. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you enjoy coffee, then why would we take that away from you? There you go. You've got your cup of coffee. Why would we add caffeine into a supplement and take away your freedom to enjoy exactly how much coffee you like? That doesn't seem like something that is a helpful supplement. So you're not going to have that instant, you know, stimulant effect of caffeine. Just like an Unplug, you're not going to have a knockout effect of a sedative. Mm-hmm. It's things that will take a little bit longer to build and have a much more long-term helpful impact. Mm-hmm. So instead of stimulants and sedatives, we're using ingredients and precursors that your brain can actually use as the building blocks for specific hormones and neurotransmitters for better mood or better sleep or better stress management.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that, I don't know if you would relate to this, but I think for a lot of guys and women, but guys in particular, if there's not a kind of immediate benefit to something, it's maybe not something that you invest your time, energy, or money in. And, mm-hmm. you know, like for me to find that happy mental space through the last kind of months of craziness, that's required like therapy and antidepressants, because I allowed myself to get to a point where I was completely broken, absolutely collapsed mentally. I mean, not physically. But I now have that question of like, okay, so that happened. How do we now protect ourselves from that becoming like a repeat occurrence in your life? So how do you create healthier habits and healthier routines? And it's these kind of questions that for the audience, amazing, but also for me personally, I'm like, okay, interesting. Like these kind of supplements over time can build like a new quote unquote new normal for an individual. And that's the interesting thing, you know, like, are you putting out a fire with kind of intervention treatment, or are you just making sure that the bush never gets set on fire in the first place?
Right. And you have to kind of bear, like, put this in mind and or put this in perspective of like how our lives have evolved over the last 50 or 100 years. You know, where our labor used to be physical labor, today it's all mental. Like our mental load is way heavier than it's ever been in the history of mankind. And our what we measure as our nutritional requirements is broadly based on physical labor, you know, the sort of national nutritional reference values and things like this. Mm-hmm. But our brain burns 20% or more of our energy, and our entire workday is based around mental load. So surprise, surprise, there's pretty much a global epidemic of magnesium deficiency.
Really?
And this is because we're high stress, where our days are very, very mentally loaded. We've got lots of stimulations coming through all the day, and then you add things like caffeine, which burn more magnesium, alcohol, which causes to burn more magnesium. And so, of course, we're not getting enough magnesium in our body. So that's the first thing that we do with our stress supplement, Hormone Balance, is pump a load of three different sources of magnesium just to make sure that you're catered for that. So we're always taking a holistic approach, but, you know, some people would say things like, oh, we'll just reduce your decision-making, you know, and create habits. And fine, that can be helpful. You know, you were talking about Mark Zuckerberg wearing the same t-shirt every day. Maybe that's helpful, but some people say that there's about 30,000 decisions that our brain goes through every day, most of them without realizing it. So removing one, like wearing the same clothes every day, or having the same lunch every day, or, you know, getting your meals delivered, morning, lunch, and dinner. Those things might help, but they're only ever going to be marginal. What we really need is to make sure that we're actually equipped to deal with what our modern lives are like.
Yeah. I think as well is that, okay, I don't know if this is an excuse or if it's, if I'm right, I don't know, but I definitely find the whole decision fatigue thing is, humble bragging's maybe the wrong thing. I don't know, telling somebody to like, oh, decision fatigue is like a big thing, like you need to reduce your mental like load. So you should be making less decisions. Like the best people in the world do that. Feels like it's like, okay, well, now I'm having to make a decision about what decisions.
Like, yeah, and the bit, you know, like you've the added, smartest.
I didn't worry about this shit. Like I wasn't. I wasn't trying to work out which decisions are essential until you fucking told me that apparently I make too many decisions and now I'm concerned. So like, motherfuck you. Thanks for that. Like,
but also that's just plain survivorship bias where somebody wildly successful has five personal assistants and you're like, oh, look, that person makes way less decisions than me in a day. That must be why they're successful. No, it's not. They have personal assistants because they've been successful. It's got nothing to do with creating the success.
Yeah, it's not cause, it's effect. Like
Exactly.
Yeah. That's dead interesting, man. Well, I'm really excited to try your supplements. I'm definitely going to wanted to chat to you before I bought. We had a guy on the show called Toby, who also has just launched his first supplement that looks at like, it's more cosmetic. So it's hair, nails, skin. And I tried out his stuff. Those are gummies, which actually really work for me because I'm lazy. So I find that like, if I have to go fill up some water to take a pill, like I normally just don't take the pill, which is dumb, but like it's a decision, you know, like it's another thing I've got to decide. But I'm excited to try yours. I'll pick some up online. I guess the last thing that I wanted to chat to you about was the fact that you used to be a professional swimmer. And I don't know if the audience caught that, but at a professional level, you know, like you were up there swinging. What was that experience like? Is it something that you remember fondly? Is it a happy time in your life?
Yeah, it is. But I have to be careful not to have too much like hindsight bias and only remember the good times, because that would be quite easy. Because, you know, when you look back on a sporting career, the biggest memories tend to be like those really big moments of like achieving something really cool and being like incredibly happy about it. But equally, you know, there was years and years and years of getting up at 5 a.m. or 4:45 a.m. and, you know, sacrificing a huge amount of you know, student life and young life and so on. So that was difficult. It was difficult to, well, the decision to make the sacrifices is actually not so difficult, because I tend to be the kind of person who makes that decision once and then, you know, kind of doesn't look back, because that just makes your life a lot easier. But it's just very physically and mentally hard. Like you know, pushing yourself to the extreme for 4 or 5 hours a day, 6 days a week, like pretty much every week of the year for years. It's just very, very hard. That's the main thing. You
know? Really difficult.
and you know, people say like, you know, things get easier, but not in elite sport, because the bar keeps moving, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't just get to a level and suddenly things become easy. That's not really how it works. I mean, you know, even somebody who dominated the sport as much as Michael Phelps did would never say that he was, you know, he reached a point where he could take it easy. He was always trying, right? Never coasting, no, always trying to improve. So you're either trying to be a competitor or you're trying to beat yourself, your old self. Yeah. So it's never, you know, it's a bit like lifting weights. You never sort of, the weight might start to feel easier, but then you just, stand back up higher in the squat or put more weight on. It's never actually, the bar just keeps moving. So it's always very difficult. But equally, I really, really loved it. Like I loved feeling like I was just so fit, just like at the like prime of what I could possibly be in terms of like physical strength and fitness and speed. Like I wasn't number one in the world or anything like that, but I was just what I could be at the, like my potential. I feel like I maxed out at it, and that was just an awesome feeling.
Yeah. I can relate to I can't relate to that at all. I can relate to the desire for that. So I'm trying to qualify as a personal trainer, or I am qualifying as a personal trainer at the moment. So the ambition being that with the running wear brand that I've just launched, alongside the kind of PTing, I want to build in the kind of mental health side of things and nutrition, and try and have this kind of lifestyle offering that I can put out there. But the reason that A, I'm doing that, and B, I wanted to do this series around just athletes and people in the fitness industry. And I've said this a million times in the show, so people are probably sick of hearing it, but I just fucking love how binary fitness is. You know, that you don't have to beat yourself up over failing to lift a rep or failing to run a certain speed or failing to complete something. It's not about success or failure. It's about like, I did or I did not. It's really binary. Like when you do a workout or you kind of compete in something, like you either have or have not accomplished what you set out to do. And in a world where, at least in my career, where it's just sheer ambiguity, you know, marketing is just shades of gray. There's no kind of, this is how you market a product. There's no secret sauce. There's no silver bullet. It's just a case of like, you try things and you learn and you get it wrong. And that'll always be the case. I fucking love when I just put my headphones in an exercise and it's a case of like, okay, you did or didn't do the workout. Like it's really refreshing. And it's that feeling of like being fit, like, you know, just like lowercase f, like feeling fit at the end of a workout. It is the best feeling, you know, it's that reward. So no, I can totally get, like, I was feeling that when you were describing that feeling, I was like, oh man, that must've been so boss. Like take out the competition element, just the personal satisfaction of like giving 100% to something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this week I played in the first my first tennis tournament ever, and it was like extremely amateur. Like people, you know, the players there were not very good.
Like Tim Henman and people like that.
Yeah, right. But I was fucking terrified.
Why?
Because, you know, because it's entirely new. Like, yeah. And I was just completely out of my comfort zone. You know, it's like, you know, where do you put your bag? Like, what do you bring?
Yeah, that is the worst bit. And it's so true. Like if you ever go to, I've moved back from London to Scotland last year, but I can remember, say you went to like Barry's or Cobox or whatever, the biggest hurdle to going to a new class was going to the first session, which I think is probably indicative of
and
most
people are,
things.
And those spaces are so cliquey, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's and like you have to conform.
Yeah, where do you put your bag? Like what's the etiquette in the locker room? Of like,
you leave it in the locker, do you take it with you?
Yeah, what the fuck's the deal? Like somebody send me a pamphlet beforehand. No, you're so right. That's so insightful in terms
but
of like.
But it's always the silliest things, right? And I feel like they're so silly that most people would never dare even mention them. But we're all stood there going like, "Fuck! Did I take the bag in the wrong place?"
Yeah, literally. And then you can see when someone else is new, because like once you know that obviously you don't take your bag into the room, you see someone else and you have that thing of like, "Oh, it must be their first session."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't know the unwritten rules, the tacit agreement we all made to leave our water bottles in that corner of the room.
But yeah,
yeah. Oh man.
But it was awesome. Like getting, you know, doing that thing, like completely out of my comfort zone was really cool.
It's uncomfortable. Like, I think that's such a cliche, isn't it? But like any kind of growth, any kind of success, like is an uncomfortable process. Change is an uncomfortable process, but it's essential. Okay, buddy, before you go, I'm going to ask you a really cheesy question, which I try to remember to ask all guests, which I used to call cliche corner. If you could give, like your younger self at Stirling Uni competing in swimming, any advice that you know now, you know, like what are you sending back in the time capsule?
Okay. I hear you, but, I would think of this question differently, because.
Well, it's not your show. No, I'm kidding. No, reframe how you want.
Okay. I'm just going to reframe slightly and say, I'm not telling this to myself because I don't like the idea of that hindsight and kind of like worrying about maybe I did things not optimally and, you know, because that leads to regret very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I tend to, you know, when it's, you know, I was talking about like making that decision of committing to swimming and then, you know, now in business, it's like you have so many ideas. It's very difficult to kind of know which one to focus on and really commit to because time and energy is limited. So I feel like I'm quite good at that. What makes me good at that is then once the decision is made, not worrying about it. And so if I kind of project myself back in time and go, oh, maybe I didn't make the right decision, that's going to fuck me up for my future decisions. And I'm going to think, way overthink it, and it's going to remove my ability to make decisions easily. So what I'd say is, I feel much more comfortable giving advice based on my experience to younger people. Right?
Fine.
But okay. not my old self. And to younger people, I would say, whether it's in sports or business or pretty much any endeavor that you want to get into, speak to people, just and open up. Like, be vulnerable with people, because not many people are able to do this. But if you're vulnerable with somebody and you open up just in the slightest, it's amazing what happens downstream from this. They'll then go, whoa, this person is being vulnerable with me. I can really let loose and, you know, open up with them. And then you you establish relationships with people that there's no other ways to do this. And that person will remember you. And perhaps a couple years down the line, that you'll be the person they'll call when a big opportunity comes up for whatever it might be. But being vulnerable and open and speaking to people is what triggers these downstream effects and this networking effect.
So I love that.
Speak to people, be open.
Buddy, man. Okay, Joe, thanks so much for your time today on the show. It's been a real pleasure having you on. And yeah, looking forward to trying the product.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that we try and do is keep things simple. So, you know, you were talking about adding too many complications. I know how loaded people's days are, so we try and keep things very simple in the offering that we have, and hopefully that makes a big difference.
Thanks so much, man. That's working.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.